So let's go back to 2 Kings. We finished chapter 2, but I wanted to go back and look at a couple of things real quick. In verse 11, it says, "And it came to pass as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and the horses of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha," verse 12, "saw it and cried out," or cried, "My father, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more, and he took hold of his own clothes and he rent them in two places." And it goes on, and the sons of the prophets, they say, well, maybe he got left on the mountains or in a valley and we'll go look for him. And Elisha says no, and they talk him into it finally. And verse 18 says, "And when they came again to him, for he tarried at Jericho, he said unto them, Did I not say unto you, go not?" Because they didn't find him. And so most people say that Elisha died, or Elijah died, and God took him to heaven. But let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 34, because we know that it says in the Word that when people die, they die, and that nobody is alive again until Christ comes back. Now, having said that, to the person that dies or falls asleep, that's born again or was a believer, they fall asleep, there's no recognition of time, so their next waking moment is the return of Christ. So it's a momentary thing to that person. To us that remain, it could be, you know, interminable. So in chapter 34, verse 1, it says, "And Moses went up from the plain of Moab into the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan, and all Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh, and the land of Judah, unto the utmost sea, and the south, and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, This is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine own eyes, with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor. But no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. And it says, and Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. So Moses, that great man of God, God carried him away and buried him so that nobody would find his burial place. I can't say for sure why, but we know that men have gotten the supposed bones of different famous religious people and made them relics and worship them. So that's just human nature. Let's go to Psalm 116. Psalm 116 and verse 15. This is a great verse because many times it's misused. It says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. And some people will read that at a funeral like God is excited to have another person in heaven. But the word precious means costly. Costly in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Why? Because if you're dead, you can't do anything for God. You can't live for God. You can't speak for God. You can't glorify God. We know that death is a result of sin, and the author of death is the devil. He has the power of death. And it says that in Hebrews, and Jesus Christ conquered him. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. First Corinthians 15 and verse 20. But now, right now, is Christ risen from the dead and become the first fruits of them that slept. He's the first one that died, that rose again from the dead, and went to heaven. And first fruits means what? First fruits, right? He's the first one. Moses, Elijah, Elisha, David, they all preceded Jesus Christ in time, right? In their lives, they lived before him. But it says that Jesus Christ is the first fruits of them that slept. He's the first one. Then it goes on, for since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam, all die. And all die until Christ comes back. There will be people alive when Christ comes back that will be changed. But until Christ comes back, all that are alive will die. Even so, in Christ shall all be made alive. But every man in his own order. Christ the first fruits, afterward they that are Christ's, when? At his coming. Very clear, very simple, very succinct. It tells us exactly when it'll happen, at his coming. Jesus Christ is the first fruits. Everybody else that dies is asleep until Christ returns, and then they wake up. Let's go to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2, verse 29. Men and brethren, let me freely speak unto you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his sepulcher is with us unto this day. Therefore, being a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him, that of the fruit of his loins, according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on his throne. He, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell, neither his flesh did see corruption. This Jesus hath God raised up, whereof we are all witnesses. So, you know, if people by their merit would go to heaven, you would think that certainly Moses and David and Abraham and all these guys would be there, but it says that they don't. Everybody goes in their order, and the order of the first is Jesus Christ, then everybody else. And then one more verse, Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10, verse 34. Thank you, dear. And this is when Peter is talking to Cornelius. This verse is not the only place it says this, but in verse 34 it says, then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. The context here is he's not a respecter between Jew and Gentile. But God's no respecter of persons. So if one person got to heaven before somebody else, you'd be a respecter of person. You know, that would be a good thing to die because you get to be with God. And death is not a good thing. God never wanted man to die. So by looking at these scriptures and others dealing with the subject of death, we see that Elijah was not taken up into the heavenlies to live forever with God. He was transported away and died remotely so as his body would not be found, as best as we could see. Kind of like Moses, right? Okay, back to 1 Kings, or 2 Kings, rather. So we're going to pick up where we left off with Elijah in chapter 3, and then we're going to get into Elijah the next couple of nights because he's really exciting. Elijah was exciting But Elisha's even, he does even more stuff, and he's all over the place. So, verse 1 of chapter 3, "Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. And he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Nevertheless, he cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom." It's kind of interesting. Jeroboam is the standard for evil. You know, anytime I talk about, well, you know, he's like Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. If they want to talk about a good king, they talk about, well, he was good, kind of like David. He was the standard for good. Verse 4, "And Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep master and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with the wool." Rams and lambs. "But it came to pass when Ahab was dead that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel." He said, I'm not going to pay that anymore. "And King Jehoram went out of Samaria the same time and numbered all of Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, The king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and my horses as thy horses." You know, Mikasa, Sukasa. God bless you. "And he said, Which way shall we go up? And he answered, The way through the wilderness of Edom. So the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. And the king of Israel said, Alas, that the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab." So now he's getting nervous. He said, Are we getting sucked into something? But Jehoshaphat said, Is there not a prophet of the Lord that we may inquire of the Lord by him? And one of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, Here is Elijah, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the handle of Elijah. So, that he would pour, you know, Elisha, when he was first called by Elijah, was kind of like his servant, right? He followed him, and so when he poured water on his hands, you know, he'd pour water on his hands to, so he could wash them, and it was kind of like he was his servant, he was humble. And Jehoshaphat said, The word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, What have I to do with thee? Get thee to the prophets of thy father and to the prophets of thy mother. And the king of Israel said unto him, Nay, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. And Elisha said, As the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. That's a slap, isn't it? You know, remember, Elisha's a man of God, and Elijah just, you know, shows up one day and calls him out. But God knows the heart of a man. And Elisha was really terrific. And, you know, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And he walked with God. He listened to God. So he says to the king, he says, I wouldn't even look at you. It's great. Verse 15, But now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, Thus saith the Lord, Make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, Ye shall see the wind, not see the wind, neither shall ye see rain, yet the valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts. and this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. He said, this is but a light thing for God. You know, to us, it's like, holy cow, miraculous. He's going to fill up the whole valley with water so they can drink and take care of their animals. And they're going to wipe out the Moabites, and God's going to give them the victory. And it's a light thing. Pretty wild. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. And ye shall smite every fenced city in every choice city, and shall fell every good tree, and stop all the wells of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones. And it came to pass in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, that behold, there came water by the way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. And when all the Moabites heard that the kings were come up to fight against them, they gathered all that were able to put on armor and upward and stood in the border. And they rose up early in the morning, and the sun shone upon the water, and the Moabites saw the water on the other side as red as blood. Wow. It must have been quite a sight. And they said, this is blood. The kings are surely slain, and they have smitten one another. Now, therefore, Moab, go to the spoil. And when they came to the camp of Israel, the Israelites rose up and smote the Moabites, so they fled before them. But they went forward, smiting the Moabites, even in their country. And they beat down the cities on every good place of land, cast every man a stone, and filled it, and they stopped all the wells of water and felled all the good trees. Only in Kirhar Aseth left they stones thereof, howbeit the slingers went about and smote it. And when the king of Moab saw that the battle was too sore for him, he took with him 700 men that drew swords to break through even to the king of Edom, but they could not. Then he took his eldest son that he should have reigned in his stead, and offered him for a burnt offering upon the wall. And there was great indignation against Israel, and they departed from him and returned to their own land. Wow, this guy, desperate measures, you know, when you take your own son and offer him as a burnt offering to a false god. But that's what he did. But it was a light thing for God. It was a light thing for God. Amazing. Okay, so now we get to chapter 4 of 2 Kings. And it says, now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha, saying, thy servant, my husband, is dead, and thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord, and the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen. This is a tough situation. This lady is a widow, and she has two sons, and she owes debts because she has no husband. And so what's she going to do? And so according to the law of Moses, the man, the creditor, was going to take her sons to pay the debt until they worked enough to pay off the debt. So these two sons probably would have been younger, because if they had been older, they would have been able to go out and work and earn money and pay the debt. But they weren't, so they had to be a little bit younger. And Elisha said unto her, what shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? And she said, thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. Then he said, go, borrow thee vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few. You know, he's saying, you know, go everywhere in the neighborhood, get as many empty vessels as you can. And when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and thou shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and her upon her sons, and she brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. And it came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, Bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. And when she came and told the man of God, he said, Go sell the oil and pay the debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. So she had so much oil that she could pay it, and she still paid off the debt, and she had money to live on and raise her family. So he saved the family. What a great thing. What a tremendous thing to do. And it just simply, he listened to God and she obeyed him. Remember, we read that verse about if you obey the prophets, you prosper. So she did, and that's what happened. Now we get to probably the most famous story about Elisha. And this is really a great one. And it fell on the day that Elisha passed to Shunem. And there was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as oft as they passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. There's some debate about Shunem. I don't know if there's a big debate, but Lamza says it should be Shiloh. Other students or scholars say Shunem is on the way to Shiloh. Shiloh was that place where the Ark of the Covenant was and the tabernacle, right? Where Eli lived and where Samuel lived. And so it seems to make sense that he would go there from wherever he lived, and he would go up to Shiloh periodically to do the sacrifices and do the things that he needed to do. And it says that she constrained him when he would pass by. She constrained him. She would say, please come in and eat and let us take care of you. And he'd say, well, I'm really in a hurry. And she'd say, well, I know, but we really have a great meal here for you. And he says, well, it's getting late. And she says, yeah, but, you know, we have a nice meal and you'll have strength. And so he would go in. And of course, it says she was a great woman, meaning what? She was an important lady. She was one of standing in the city or the town where they lived. She had some standing. And she said unto her husband, so this was so that it says, and it so it was that oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. So that means, you know, on a regular basis for a while, this occurred. How long, we don't know, right? But for a while, as oft as he passed by, he would turn in and she would have food for him. And she said unto her husband, Behold, now I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. So she's very perceptive, right? She knows that Elisha is the man of God. She says, Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick, and it shall be when he cometh to us that he shall turn in thither. So what does that mean? It's not a, they didn't build, you know, break through a wall and make a room, but in those days, you know, in the Middle East, the roofs were flat, and sometimes they had stairways going up to the roof because they would sit up there. And so they built a house on top, I mean, a room on top of the house for him. And it said, you know, a little chamber, and let us set for him a bed. And a bed would be a bedroll. It would be blankets, maybe some straw, a place for him to sleep, because they didn't have beds like we have. And he would get a little table and a stool. And the word stool is the same word that could be translated chair or even throne. I don't think it was a throne, but it was probably a nice little chair. And the candlestick would be a lampstand. You know, it'd be a little place where they could put the lamp on. So they did this. Now, to build a room onto your house and to furnish it would take a little while, right? Take some time. You have to plan it. You have to get the materials. You have to build it. And it says, and it shall be when he cometh to us that he shall turn in thither. You know, every time he comes, we'll have a place for him to stay. As well as feed him, he can stay over the night. We can sleep. He can rest. And it fell on a day that he came thither and he turned into the chamber and lay there. So obviously now they built it and he's been coming by and he's been staying there for a while. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call the Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, he didn't speak directly to her. He spoke to his servant to speak to her, which is kind of interesting. It's part of the culture. And he said, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us, or you've had great care for us, or carefully careful with all this care, very caring for us. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. She's not asking for anything. She did it just out of love and that he was a man of God. She had great respect for him and she wanted to bless him. And Elisha said, what is then to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily she hath no child, and her husband is old. And the word child is, you know, a male child, a son. So he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid. Wow. It's kind of cool. The word handmaid in the Septuagint, the Greek, is doulos, or a feminine form of doulos. Doulon, I think it is. meaning what? Sorry. Meaning she's a servant. She's committed herself to serving him. I'm thy handmaid, which is a pretty big deal in the Middle East at that time. When you made that kind of commitment, it was a commitment you would never break. And she had committed to take care of him every time he came, to put him up, to feed him, to take care of him. And the woman conceived and bare a son at the season that Elijah had said unto her according to the time of life. So that means what? 9 months, approximately, after he had promised that. So from the beginning of this record in verse 8, we know that Elijah has been passing by on a regular basis. Then she invites him to eat, and he does so as often as he passes by. Then they build him a room, and that takes some time. And then after, she's been taking care of him, then he says, you're going to have a child, because he knows she wants one. And so another 9 months go by. So this is a while, right? Time has passed. Yeah, probably a couple of years, maybe. Yeah, we don't know for sure. But the time period from verses 8 to 10, would have taken a while. And then, of course, later on, to have a child is at least 9 months, and, depending on when he came back by again. So, she conceived the son at the season that Elijah had said unto her, according to the time of life. And when the child was grown... So now the child has grown. I'm not sure exactly at what age young boys would go out and start working with their father. But there's a time, maybe 10 or 11 or 12 years old, they would start going out. At 13, of course, they would be bar mitzvahed or whatever they did, and they would be considered a man. So he was grown. Maybe he was 13, 12, 13. We don't know. So again, years have passed, right? Years. And it fell on a day that he went out to his father, to the reapers. And he said unto his father, "My head, my head." And he said to a lad, "Carry him to his mother." And when he had taken him, he brought him into his mother. He sat on her knees till noon. He sat on her knees till noon and then died. What a tragedy. And she went up and laid him on a bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. So she has in her mind what she's going to do. And she called unto her husband and said, "Send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, I may run to the man of God and come again." And he said, "Wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." And she said, "It shall be well." And I guess they knew, you know, where when he came on his, he had some kind of schedule and he would come by and, you know, do the sacrifices on his way to Shiloh and all that stuff. And she saddled the ass and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee." So she went and came unto the man of God to the Mount Carmel. Now, according to what I read, it's probably at least 30 miles from Shunem to Mount Carmel. So on a donkey, that's probably more than a full day's or a long day's journey. And he died at 12 noon on a day. So they, who knows how the time went, but it took them a while to get there. So she went, verse 25, and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel, about 30 miles. And it came to pass when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Behold, yonder is that the Shunammite? Run now, I pray thee, to meet her and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with thy child?" And she answered, "It is well." You know, she didn't confess a negative. She was there for deliverance for her child. And when it came, when she came to the man of God, to the hill, she caught him by his feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away. And the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me and hath not told me." Wow. You know, what a difficult situation. Here's this wonderful woman who has done everything she could to bless Elisha, the man of God, this wonderful man. And when he tells her she's going to have a son, she's, you know, overwhelmed because her husband is old, and she gets that son, and then he grows up, and then he dies. So she runs to him. So he says, you know, "I don't know what's going on, but God has hid it from me. He had not told me." Then she said, "Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me?" Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up thy loins, take my staff in thine hand, and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not, and if any salute thee, answer him not again, and lay my staff upon the face of the child." So Elijah's immediately got an answer. He's going to send his servant and his staff. And the mother of the child said, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." And he arose and followed her. She was not going to let Elisha get out of her sight. She knew that he was the guy that she needed. And Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff upon the face of the child. So 30 miles there, 30 miles back. That's at least 2 days, a long, hard journeying. And that child has been dead for at least 2 days. So Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him and told him, saying, the child is not awaked. And when Elisha was come unto the house, behold, the child was dead and laid upon his bed. So twice it told us that he was dead. He's dead, right? What happens to a body when it's dead? It gets cold and stiff. So, verse 33, he went in therefore and shut the door upon them twain and prayed unto the Lord. So the first thing Elijah does is he goes into the room by himself, shuts the door, and prays to God. That's a good thing to do. And he went up and lay upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands. And he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. So you know what that means? There's life in him, and the blood is flowing now. So then he returned, and he walked in the house to and fro, and went up and stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. Wow. That's pretty great, isn't it? And, you know, Elisha did what God told him to do. You know, there's instances where people have been raised from the dead. Elijah raised the widow woman's child from the dead, but he didn't do it the same way, did he? No. Jesus Christ raised people from the dead. He didn't do it that way either. Every time is different. It's just what God tells you to do. With healing, with raising from the dead, with miracles, anything. It's always different. Every time God delivered Israel in a battle, he'd do it a different way. You know, we just read where he flooded the valley. Another time, you know, he told them to go out and they sent musicians out in front of them and the enemy turned on each other and slaughtered each other. Another time he sent hornets out before them. You know, God is just really amazing. He never does anything the same way twice, it doesn't seem. Anyway, the child opened his eyes. Wow, hallelujah. And he called Gehazi and said, call the Shunammite. So he called her, and when she had come unto him, he said, take up thy son. And when she went in, she fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. Okay, that's pretty cool. Now, we're going to stop right there, and we're going to go to chapter 8, I believe. Okay, chapter 8, verse 1. So, we just read about how he delivered this woman's child to her. And this is the rest of the story about Elisha. Then spake Elisha unto the woman, whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise, and go thou in thine household, and sojourn wheresoever thou canst sojourn. For the Lord hath called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land 7 years. So, you know, out of love for this woman and how she was such a great person, he goes to her because at this point she's a widow. Okay? And he says, you have to leave because there's going to be a famine and go somewhere where you can survive. And the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God. And she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. And it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines. And she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elisha hath done. Okay, Gehazi at this time is no longer with Elisha, and he's at the king's court just at the time when this woman shows up. And the king is asking him about all the great stuff that Elisha does. And it came to pass as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. What a coincidence. Isn't that great? Timing is everything. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life. And when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land, even until now. Wow. So she got the land back, her house, and she got repaid for any crops or things that her land had produced, which is pretty great. But you know, that woman was just had a heart to give. She just loved Elisha and she had a heart to give, and God took care of her and rewarded her and just enriched her life. What a great thing. Where are we? We'll go back to chapter 4. That's where we were, right? 4? And we'll finish up 4. And we'll call it a night. So back in chapter 4, verse 38. So he, you know, she took her son and she bowed to the ground. You know, she paid homage to Elisha, took up her son and went out. And that's the end of that story. Verse 38. And Elisha came again to Gilgal. He's on the road again. And there was a dearth in the land. And the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. And he said unto his servant, set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds in his lap full and came and shared them and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. So they poured out for the men to eat, and it came to pass as they were eating the pottage that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in this pot. And they could not eat thereof. Death meaning it's poisonous, right? Just, you know, something wrong. And he said, then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot and said, pour out for the people that they meet. And there was no harm in the pot. So, and just put whatever it was in it, and it was healed. It's kind of like when they crossed the Red Sea and they came to that place, that oasis, and they needed water, and the water was bad. And they said, we can't drink of this water. And then Moses cut a tree down and fell into the water, and the water became sweet. I don't know if it has to do with the tree going in or just the believing of the man, but it worked. Verse 42, and there came a man from Baal Shalisha, and brought the man of God bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley and full ears of corn in the husk thereof. And he said, give unto the people that they may eat. And his servitor said, what should I set this before 100 men? And he said again, give the people that they may eat. For thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and it shall leave thereof. And it set up before them, and they did eat and left thereof according to the word of the Lord. Whatever that all means. Except I guess there wasn't a lot of food and they fed everybody. So, yeah, multiplied it. Okay, chapter 5 is Naaman the leper, and that's a pretty long record, so we're going to stop here tonight. Okay? But I just think that's such a great record with that Shunammite woman, how she had a heart to take care of that man of God. And in return, God blessed her mightily in every way. You know, just took care of her. And how, you know, she came back from the famine. He warned her about the famine. She left, and when she came back, she got her all her land, her house, and the profits from whatever it produced. What a great thing. What a wonderful, loving God. So, Father God, we just thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us, for taking care of us and protecting us. And we thank you for what a great and mighty God you are, how you just do your best for us. And that we just need to rise up in our believing to trust you and believe you absolutely. And we will see great things happen also. So we thank you for this night, for loving us, for everybody getting home safe and having a great night's sleep. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.